Anyone who clicked on this podcast, you knew what was coming. The only surprise that lies within is that Nicolò Buliga actually lost a race for once. Welcome back to Motorsport 101.
Yeah, it's like Paul Heyman looking bemused and shocked into the background as the one next to 25-1 rolls up on the screen as Nicolò Buliga finally lost the World Superbike race to Eikel Lukwamina before winning the other two that weekend to get a new winning streak going. Of course, welcome to episode 672 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Trey Harrison. Glad you can join us. And yeah, it's MotoGP's 2026 German Grand Prix weekend. Well, I'm not
what
even
did
gonna,
you think happened?
Let's just say the Ford book came through. Marc Marquez with a double victory to take himself to within 18 points of the world championship lead as the MotoGP season hits the halfway mark. And the summer break is now upon us. We might do a mid-season report, depending on how busy the next couple of weeks are. We'll see how we go. MotoGP's now off for the next month. But there's still a lot of interesting things to talk about here, Marquez's dominance being one of them. The fact we now have the top five in the championship within a Grand Prix of each other, which is fascinating in of its own self. The Aprilias are refusing to go away, but it's not the factory team that's the threat. Again, it's Team Trackhouse. As Ayagura is now second in the championship. He's not going away anytime soon. And that's interesting in its own right. We've got a couple of more silly season stories to talk about as well. And good news, everybody. The one bike rule might be dead. Hooray!
Oh, hell yeah.
There's a plus. All that and more in the next, inside joke between everybody else here. We're recording this at 7 p.m. UK time on July 15th. So by the time this goes out, you'll know whether Argentina or England are in the World Cup final. And we're recording this with a 55-minute time limit because we all want to sit down and watch that game afterwards. Hooray! RJ, how's it going?
I'm just here to restore order because, as Dre mentioned, you'll know whether or not Lionel Messi will try and repeat on the way out or whether England will play in its first World Cup final in 60 years since the last time they won it. And I can tell you, Dre's going to be watching that entire thing through the gaps in his fingers.
Look, I've tried to deny this, all right? But this country is an infinitely better place when England's football team actually wins something. So, for the sake of some actual optimism for once, it would be really nice if England wins this. If we end up losing this semi-final, this is going to sound really funny in hindsight. Cam, how's it going, mate?
It certainly is going, which is a hell of a lot more than I can say for Marco Bezzecchi's year.
We'll talk about that too, because, boy, might be the biggest story to come out of this Germany Grand Prix weekend, besides Marquez's double victory, of course, because...
Not a story at the Sachsenring, Dre.
Exactly. So, yeah, Marco Bezzecchi's season's gone from bad to terrible to somehow even worse. More on that very, very shortly. Pit, places you can find us real quick in the meantime. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter at motorsport_101 if you want to watch on Blue Sky. You can just find our names, Dre Harrison, Lobbyscott at social, RJ O'Connell for him, Cam Buckley's at CBuckley917, just yank out the vowels. When you get your video highlights of the show, you can do so on our Instagram page, Motorsport101Pod, and our TikTok account, the M101_podcast. Check us out on there. Our website, motorsport101.com. By the time this goes out, you'll have full reviews of both MotoGP's race in Germany and a bonus article talking about the kind of end of an era of MotoGP's middle class, because we've got a lot of established veterans that are almost certainly not going to be on next year's grid. We'll talk a little bit about that later on in the show. And you can, if you really, really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our episodes. You can upgrade to the $10 tier to listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded, as Ghost Raptor and Jason is doing so right now, saying, quote, "Man, so cursed, you wonder where's Danhausen." Good points. Very funny. Also,
yeah.
Big shout out to our man Fergus, who just backed us for a whole year.
Yeah!
Thank you.
Fuck yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, for those who don't know, if you would back us at any tier for the full year up front, you get it at 30% off. So huge thank you to Fergus for committing to us for an entire year. Given I'm out of work right now, I do really, really extra appreciate all the extra support. I've never asked for it, and I've always said, please send that money to places that you think might be more important. So if you're sending it my way, I'm eternally grateful. So thank you very, very much for that indeed. As said, you get 30% off a year-long commitment at any tier. So thank you so much for the ongoing support. As mentioned one more time, patreon.com/motorsport101 if you want to back us financially on there. Right. That's enough of the formalities. Let's talk about the MotoGP 2026 German Grand Prix. 10.
You all know why we're here. We got the formalities out of the way. Let's just cut to the chase. Marc Marquez was a fastest lap in the sprint away from double grand slamming the German Grand Prix weekend. He was completely untouchable, taking pole with a new lap record, winning the sprint ahead of his brother Alex and fellow Ducati Fabio Di Giantonio. But the Grand Prix itself is a different story. Both the Ducatis mentioned crashed, Di Giantonio and then Marquez. Alex ran the beautiful tribute livery to the Telefonica star Grassini. Those days of Sete Gibernau and Marco Bellandria and DiGiro Cato, God rest his soul. But Marquez low-sided it into the ground at the final quarter while Digia tucked the front and turned 10 before the waterfall. It led to Ayagura having a clear path to second place ahead of teammate Raul Fernandez for another Trackhouse double podium. They are the ones living in Funky Town right now. But You may have noticed we've not mentioned somebody, and that's Marco Bezzecchi, who looked fast in practice. But at turn 6 during Q2, he had a gargantuan 90-mile-an-hour high side that shattered his clavicle. He had to leave Germany to head home for surgery. He missed the rest of the weekend and is touch and go for the British Grand Prix, which is after the summer break in August. So with all of that, Marc Marquez, incredibly, is now just 18 points from championship leader Jorge Martin, the top five separated by less than a Grand Prix's worth of points. Martin, as mentioned on top, Ayagura trailing by 14, Marc Marquez trailing by 18, Marco Bezzecchi now trailing by 22, Fabio Di Giantonio trailing by 24. That's your title picture coming into the summer break. Gentlemen, where do you want to start first?
I think we've got to start with Bez, haven't we? Because that's probably the biggest story of the weekend.
We've gone from why not Bez to why oh why Bez. You know, I have as many points as Marco Bezzecchi in the last four primary races in MotoGP this year, which is zero.
If you want an average, if you want a direct comparison, points scored in the last four Grand Prix weekends, Marco Bezzecchi 13, Marc Marquez 119. That's the difference. And don't get me wrong, part of that is because Marquez has won three out of the last four. But this is a man that was 108 points off the championship lead at Mugello four rounds ago. That was only 6 weeks back. It's now 18. He's done the Max Verstappen comeback in half the time. It's terrifying what he's doing right now. And look, this was always going to be Marquez as a heavy favorite to win. We know the story. This was Marc Marquez's 10th Premier Class win at the Sachsenring, his 13th in all classes, ties the great Giacomo Agostini's record. I think it was somewhere in Finland where Agostini won 10. Yeah, Imatra, there you go. Thank you. Imatra, we won 10 top flight races in his career there as well. But the story really for me is Marco Bezzecchi's title campaign has completely crumbled. It was looking like it was going to be an Aprilia factory fight for the championship, and now Bez is 22 points, almost the entire Grand Prix off the pace. It's a disaster. It's an unmitigated disaster. That is a man that needs this reset badly, and now he's recovering from injury.
Well, yeah, now he doesn't get a choice because when that bike sent him off and it was a classic long corner high side. Jeez, we usually don't see those since like the 800s in that style.
Rear just
goes, front grips, it grips back, and it just launched him off the bike. And yeah, displaced fracture of the clavicle, which is very, very lucky in that he's not, in that this is right before the summer break, because that's not the kind of collarbone injury where you can pull a Lorenzo, bolt it back together, and hop back on the bike. He's going to be touch and go in 4 weeks. We don't know if he will be here for Silverstone.
Yeah, they operated on that shoulder immediately, day after it happened on the Saturday. Aprilia's own camp basically said the aim is the British Grand Prix at Silverstone, but they could not guarantee Bezzecchi's fitness for that race. I would say, in my experience of dealing with ceiling biking injuries, a broken clavicle is normally about a month. You would normally miss 2 to 3 Grand Prix off the back of that, depending on timing. So if I'm kind of agree with Aprilia's prognosis here. I think it's going to be touch and go whether he makes the British Grand Prix. And even if he does, it's not going to be anywhere near 100%. He was already sore as shit off the back of his 125-mile-an-hour crash at Ramshuk at Assen. This only makes it worse.
Yeah, he, in his own words, was already, and if you were to refer it in Marquez terms, safe mode. And just the thing that's going to make it sting so much more is because we know that Ducati does not really love Silverstone in recent times. If it's the other Aprilias that reap the benefit from there, that's one less round that he has a chance to make good, because he's just not going to be at 100%. You'd probably expect him to be, if he does race there, last of the Aprilias, you know, health willing. The dude has, I had to look this up, when he finishes the primary race, he has an average finish of 1.71 this year.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, that is a nailed-on title. The problem is he ain't finishing races. Some races, he isn't even starting.
It's wild.
So bad.
Two did not start in the last four weekends.
It's like he's put a Stage 4 Turbo from Gran Turismo 2 on the McLaren collapse of last year. And McLaren only got away with that because Red Bull's car was just not at the races for the first two-thirds of the year.
Mark Marquez is back at the races halfway through.
Oh, yes, he is.
Oh, my God. Dre, I know you were just happy to be like, yeah, the summer of the Norwegian Viking row is over because we advanced to semifinals. And then you see Mark Marquez doing it with his team, feel like, we can go out there and win this championship. That was so freaking cool.
This is the kind of mental illness that fuels championships.
Oh, yeah. Like, this is...
The dude is beating a fucking war drum.
I've never seen anything like it. Like, this was the first time that I think Marquez has actively spoken up about wanting to win the championship. Because, I mean, if you go into the weekend... He was very much playing mind games. On Friday, after qualifying, like...
These are all my rivals, all that same old every week.
In practice, he was like, oh, yeah, well, Alex and Digia and Bez are all very close. You know, he did qualify fastest in practice, but it was like, yeah, these guys are all close. And to be fair, in the sprint, it was close. It was, you know, the top three were within a second of each other by the end of the race. But at the same time... It never looked like Marquez was under any kind of genuine pressure. It was a comfortable win, relatively speaking.
Yeah, the sprint was like a masterclass on how to win a race as slowly as possible, because he never overstepped. He was just always just out of reach of Alex. Right. Worth noting, Marquez did do something that you would have expected him to do already. He broke the all-time track record at the Sachsenring, which feels fitting that he in the 1000cc era, the last year of these bikes, he would do.
Yes, and apparently Digia was pissed because he had that record last year when he was on pole here last season. So Digia after the race was, you took my all-time record as well, you little fucking bastard, is what he said to Mark in Parc Fermé after that was over, which was quite funny.
Well, you know what else he said? This came out in the Ducati, like the team videos that they put out on YouTube.
Very good.
Always very well produced. Two things. One, Davide Tardozzi does not know how to use a computer. Nope. At fucking all.
Nope.
Because it was Gigi's birthday, but he was not at the track, I believe.
No, but also they had to FaceTime him.
Yeah, they did. If I had 10 more laps, I would have caught you. Mark immediately claps back. Well, tomorrow you'll have 15 more. Nope. This race was Mark beating everyone over that barrel of crazy good oil.
Yeah, it's crazy good oil. Yeah, that
was crazy good.
Yeah, it was wild. I mean, and Raptor points this out in the chat, and it's worth pointing out something we didn't realize until after the race was over. Fabio DiAntonio changed his aero package during the weekend. Apparently, he's been doing this all season long, where he will flip between the 2024 Ducati aero package and the 26 package, depending on how he feels about the track. This weekend, he did it after Saturday's running, went to the 26 aero package on Sunday, and then tucked the front and crashed.
Yeah. Whoops. And that wasn't even so much one of your traditional Ducati death and taxes tucked fronts. He just got the corner completely, completely wrong on entry and basically clipped the paint on the inside, it looked like. How would we put this? He gave Ayagura all of the benefits, all of the clean air, and second wind. And he could only ever chip like a tenth here and there out of Mark.
Yeah, Mark.
This was classic Mark.
Yeah, it was classic point chipper Mark, where it was like, I'm just going to completely manage this gap. And I mean, I loved that Ayagura after the race was like, you could have gone faster, no? In the Parc Fermé video. And then Mark goes, we'll never know.
He is such a little shit.
Yeah, like Mark is in full mind games. So for those who didn't know what we were talking about at the top of this segment, and after the race, and it's gone viral on social media, because of course it has. And like Dorna loves a World Cup reference. If you've been watching, they constantly reference the football right now, because they just assume that if you're watching MotoGP, you must be into soccer. But right now, after the race is over, the entire Ducati pit crew is sat down outside the garage. Mark's got an oil drum, and he's beating the drum to say, gentlemen, the world championship is over there. Boom, boom, stop. Boom, boom, stop. And the whole crew is doing the Norwegian rowing celebration.
I think what's happened is he's absorbed some of the insane Davide Tardozzi bullshit, because he was in the crowd rowing there.
Yeah. it's incredible cinema. It's like the Odyssey has come to MotoGP just in time for the cinematic release. It's great.
He's banging a fucking war drum, Dre. This man is unhinged.
Is this not the most Mark Marquez thing ever seen? Because, I mean, if that isn't the evidence that this man believes he can win number 8 this year now, I don't know what is. He's now actively talking about gunning these dudes down. He's playing mind games with them, and it's working. Every other key pretender in this field, except Ayagura, made critical mistakes this weekend. And all of a sudden, he's right in the thick of this again.
You know, unfortunately, I have to disagree with that. Jorge Martin didn't. He was just anonymous. He was just kind of there mid-points table all weekend. He now leads the championship. He was the first one to put his hand up after the race. Yeah, I ain't the favorite.
Marquez was literally his quote. And I think, Cam, it stems back to Bruno, where he said straight up, and I think this has continued since, he has no confidence in the front end of the Aprilia anymore.
I wonder how numb that thing is at the limit. And this is something that Ducati dealt with, still deals with from time to time.
Lack of front end feel.
Well, and they've got a great front end. It's got tons of grip, but that doesn't necessarily mean you've got great feel through it. And I wonder how well the factory boys can really feel the limit of the bike, because it feels like they are in complete control and confidence and whooping ass right up into the point where they're very suddenly not. And we've seen it with both Aprilias this year. We've seen it a little bit with the Trackhouse boys. Everyone except Ayagura, who is second in the championship via consistency, second wind, and bleeding less points to Marquez than everyone else, but is still bleeding points.
And sometimes that's all it takes. I mean, would you have, what do you expect out of Iberger in the second half of the season, gentlemen?
I don't know. He's never been here before.
I mean, I was going to say, if you look at Iagura through the first half of this season, he's only finished outside of the top five twice. One of them was the infamous Austin mechanical failure, where we think he was almost certainly going to finish in the top five, maybe on the podium, because of that aforementioned second win we keep talking about, and how, like, Agura's got this very, very unique riding style. I mean, people, the other Aprilians have talked about this now on the record more recently, where it's like he's like a swallow. He swoops in. He likes taking these big, wide, sweeping lines, and the Aprilia seems to really like that. And it's
like
also
he's on an old Dre. It's like he's on an old 800cc Yamaha almost. Mm. Those big sweeping lines they used to love to take, and they would generate so much lap time with it.
Yeah, it's very Lorenzo-esque. It's wide sweeping lines. It's keeping that corner in speed through the corner. It's that smooth exit and that smooth power delivery. It's also really gentle on the tires, which also allows Agura to push more in that second half of the race, which we've seen so many times this year, where on used rubber, he's the fastest man in MotoGP right now.
It's like a better version of the Bastianini last 10% buff, where at Grazzini, Enea Bastianini would get to the last, what, 7 or 8 laps of a race and then just start destroying all of the other Ducatis.
Yeah, he's gone like 0.3 in the last half of a race on everybody else. It's crazy just how much extra pace he had in reserve. I mean, look, RJ, I don't know how much you've noticed this in Japan. They really are starting to believe that they might get their first MotoGP era world champion. And what I would say to you is, someone that isn't Japanese and hasn't got skin in the game so much, he's got every chance. Like,
I wonder, like, you're right, this is unprecedented in the MotoGP era. But on the other hand, he has Marc Marquez breathing down his and everybody's necks. Right?
That ultimately becomes the problem for everyone, is that you can have second wins and you can have, at this point, 1B, 1A best bike. It is very track dependent right now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I don't think there is enough Aprilia rounds left in the year to stop that dude over there. Because ultimately, Marc Marquez is just really fucking fast.
Yeah, exactly.
And he kind of overrides everything else when he's healthy by being really fucking fast.
If nothing else, this is like an incredible high watermark for Iagura, like first Japanese premier class winner in over 20 years.
Unbelievably so.
Like, whatever happens, like, everything else is house money. Who knows? Maybe by the time 2027 rolls around and he's at Yamaha, they hit it out of the park in the new regulations. We don't know that's going to be the case. This might be his one and only chance. I will say that it is kind of disappointing that there's no more not a lot of mainstream exposure on the guy. And it's just because, like, even in Japan, motorcycle racing still isn't that mainstream sport. Look, it's going up against baseball and soccer, right? It happens.
It happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad. I mean, Matt Oxley reported that apparently, like, Agura was front page news in Japan when he won that race at Assen a couple of weeks ago. And I'm glad that he's getting that attention, because, I mean, you look at the you look at the recent history of Japanese bike riders on that MotoGP ladder, there's been a lot of what-ifs and incomplete stories. Hiroshi Ayama was an excellent 250 rider, never really had the best of opportunities in the top flight. Shinya Nakano started great, ended up becoming the face of Kawasaki, ultimately not a competitive enough package to really dent the big players. Shoya Tomizawa was taken from us far too soon, as was the Jiro Kato. We never got to see what they could have been at the very highest level. You know, and Taka Nakagami was a fantastic test rider, a fantastic veteran figure who got better as he went on in his career. Nearly breached that title picture in the crazy 2020 pandemic season. Point I'm getting at here is, Japan's never had someone with this much upside in the top flight.
Not with this much time to show it, certainly.
Yeah, this is year two of Iagura in the Premier class. He's only 26 years old. He has a very good chance, in my opinion, of winning this World Championship, because both the main two players in this have got big question marks. For me, this is how I look at the situation. Agura's got one major weakness: early race pace. He can get punched in the mouth and dinged up a little bit early on, and that can sometimes even have a bit too much work to do for that second win to play catch up with. But qualifying has seemingly gotten better. Would like to see a little bit more on that. The results are great. The results are great. Like I said, he's had 11 races, 9 top fives, 4 podiums and that win at Assen. That's very good, high floor, good consistency. I like it a lot. Marquez, my main question mark with him is always going to be fitness and how much can he compromise on tracks that aren't going to be Ducati friendly, because there are going to be some more technical circuits later on, like a Mandalika, for example, where a pretty are going to go like the fucking clappers and they're almost certainly going to win. What can Marquez salvage by comparison? The good news for Marquez: one, he's Marc Marquez. 2, he shits half the game before he's even started. And 3, he's now got a month to rest the arm and get it back to something near full fitness. Because the key element for me when looking back at the notes from Marc Marquez after this race was, this was the first Grand Prix he didn't have to use his left arm to compensate for the lack of strength on his right. That's big.
That's huge. If the circumstances that put him in this hole happened and play out in the first 5 or 6 races of the year, now he is getting back pay with interest.
Mm-hmm.
That arm is only going to get better.
Yeah.
We just, look, you'd expect him to be dominant at the Saxon Ring. Even in the second half of that race, Agura could do nothing about him with every advantage that his riding style and the Aprilia has to leverage. The other problem for I is that, is he going to be top Aprilia every race where Aprilia do benefit from the nature of their bike? Probably not, because that has been the telltale this year, is all 4 Aprilias can and very much will take points off of one another. Yeah. Bez is still in the title picture if he can get his shit together. Jorge Martin, on a good weekend, is the fastest rider in that stable. With Ducati, it's a one-man show. And unfortunately for Fabio, what I was going to say about Fabio DiGiantonio, you can third and fourth place the field to death all you want with Fabio, but then that makes that crash hit twice as hard when he does make a mistake like he did this last weekend.
Yeah.
What I will say is that all 4 Aprilias have had their moments in the sun this season. Bez has been the best Grand Prix guy, especially early on, obviously, compared to this current run of form, but he's still won 4 Grand Prix this season, more than anybody else in the field so far this year. Martin has the double win at Le Mans. It's proof that if the confidence is there and he can extract all of the Aprilia, he can beat anybody on his day. We saw that in 2024, and we saw it briefly again at Le Mans. Raul Fernandez has won multiple sprint races this year and is now in the mix pretty much every weekend. We're now, a Fernandez good weekend is no longer a fluke. It's now becoming the norm for Raul, and that's why he's almost certainly going to be announced as a new Trackhouse contract sometime during this summer break. Apparently, after the sprint win second place at Assen, they slipped him an improved contract, shall we say. Right.
He got third this weekend while injured. He was dealing with back problems pretty much all race.
Had a compression shock.
Had a compressed back and yes. Having dealt with that, flying off a dirt bike, ow.
No, you don't want that. All 4 of these Aprilias at their best can win Grand Prix and can win sprint races. It's going to be a matter of who adapts well, who executes the most, and how many points are they all going to take off each other, because 3 of them are title contenders right now. Raul Fernandez is only 49 points away. He's not a million miles out. It's not impossible that Fernandez could still be in this fight down the stretch. We saw how good he was at the end of last year. Valencia, Phillip Island, Mandalika, etc. There are rounds that we know Raul is really fast around coming up later on in the year. So I would not even rule out Raul Fernandez at minus 49 either. So there's a lot of very interesting questions we're going to get some answers to in the back half of the year. Can Ogura sustain this title fight? Just what is Bez's state going to be when he comes back? How much can Mark compromise on the bad days as opposed to the good ones? And how's that arm going to feel after a month of extra focus and rehab? I don't know
how anyone's going to deal with that if he starts going off on a run like he did last year.
Yeah, fair enough. Got some silly season news. Maverick Vinales is in the middle of a second injury-riddled campaign at KTM. And Dre, it sounds like there are more and more worries that this might be it for Maverick at the end of the season.
Yeah, it's rare that I say this. I feel bad for Maverick Vinales, where I think Assen was just the round where I think he just ran out of patience and he just snapped at the situation. For those who missed it, at Assen, he basically threw KTM under the bus. He basically said that if I'm not on the grid next year, it's because of them. We got more details about that during the Germany weekend, and Pit Bearer confirmed it, the boss at KTM Racing, basically saying, yeah, we did offer Maverick a contract, but it was a very low value contract, basically. And when Maverick was going to sign it, they withdrew that offer at the last minute because they still want to evaluate just how good Maverick is when he's fully healthy. And Maverick's pretty much thrown in the towel. I think he basically said after this weekend, this is just who I am right now. He was hovering pretty much last all weekend. It was a lot like his last year at Yamaha, where he was in Germany, he was at the back, and he was just immensely frustrated with his current state. And he's basically said, I'm burnt out from MotoGP. And I feel like that's a man who's done.
Finishes for the first, and since Assen last year, no top 10 finishes in a Grand Prix.
That's a shoulder injury, man. He broke the top off his shoulder, and he's just been a shell of himself ever since. Last year, he was actually running Acosta pretty even most rounds, and then he had that catastrophic shoulder injury. And frankly speaking, it looks like the Alex Rins situation. That's it.
Yeah, I think, again, we all underestimated just how bad this was. He had the setback in preseason when he crashed in preseason testing at Sepang. He said he was fine. Turns out it bent and broke a couple of the screws in that shoulder plate in the first place. So they had to operate on it again. So he had to rehab from that again a second time round within the space of a year. And it just feels like this is who Maverick is as a rider at this point. Yeah, piling up the rehab, piling up the trauma, and just piling up on just not being able to rehab these injuries properly. And Matt Oxley threw it out there as a rumbling story. They may even just move on from Maverick mid-season. If you're KTM at this point, you've got to be thinking, why not just plug Pol Espargaró in for the rest of the year?
It'll probably get you some worthwhile development time. We're going to look back at Maverick Vinales as the MotoGP rider in a very frustrated, like, just every element of his career has been really friggin' frustrating. Because he came here, wins on a Suzuki when we know Suzuki were really not at the races for the first couple years of their program, goes to Yamaha, hotter than fish grease, and that just never came to fruition.
Yeah, this might be a hot take. Maybe the most talented rider we've had in the top flight on raw potential since Marquez. Like, when
certainly
Maverick
up there.
This is a guy that won his fourth ever 125cc race against Nico Tirol at Le Mans when he was 16 years old. Like, I
you
saw him
that
day.
Mistake.
I saw that and I was like, this kid is fucking special.
Remember, like, the first half of 2017 when he and Yamaha looked like odds-on title favorites and ultimately it just didn't play out like that? I'm looking at this all-time wins list. He's got double-digit premier class wins, 26 total class all classes, because we don't go off of MGSE or whatever their new kayfabe is. I'm like, is that a potential man? Is that a man who never realized his full potential?
It feels like he had realized it for brief glimpses.
And then Yamaha where there just stretches, went down, so did his morale. And
but the thing is, RJ,
yeah.
You know what else happened when it went down with him?
Yeah.
Fabio Quartararo beat him like a Cherokee drum.
That's the other thing, too.
Every time in Maverick's career he's experienced setbacks, he's lashed out at the people who's employed him. And this just goes all the way back to his 125/Moto3 days where he famously quit on Avincia because he felt like Avincia had breached their terms of contract by not giving him the best chance to win. So Maverick tried to boycott that weekend. They had to talk him into coming back onto the bike, and he quit the team at the end of the year to go to Calvo anyway, where he won his 125cc title, or now known as Moto3. We know the Yamaha situation where he tried to detonate his engine when things weren't working out for him. He got to Aprilia, was given a second chance. If he won that brilliant race at Austin on an Aprilia, that was the first time we really saw the Aprilia as to what it could be in the future, when Maverick completely destroyed that field from 12th on the grid. And I remember, he wins that race, pulls out the Batman mask, has the Batmav celebration, gets to Jerez, is so annoyed they can't replicate that form, he quits the team. In his head, he said, I'm out at the end of the year, because he couldn't replicate that form. Yeah.
Who's leading the championship still right now after everything?
That would be Martin.
Really? What bike does he ride?
An Aprilia.
Hmm.
Maverick had a golden chance to stick around on a future championship level bike, but he walked away too quickly because he was frustrated at their inconsistency.
And that's Aprilia had what, two and a half years of false starts before they became this, where now they can go bar for bar with Ducati most weekends. You are a top tier prospect who has shown that you can win at the top level multiple times on two different manufacturers already. That was his third.
The only rider in the modern MotoGP era to win with three different manufacturers.
And three bikes that are about as different as you could get.
Mm-hmm.
You are meant to be the talisman of that team. You are meant to lead them up into that era where they can punch through the ceiling and become that championship contender. He just didn't have the patience for it.
100%.
He's going out so sad, man.
Yeah.
That is an immensely talented rider. And like RJ said, it's still a really good career. Only 25 men in MotoGP history have ever got double-digit top flight wins. It's a smaller club than many realize. Jorge Martin doesn't have 10 MotoGP wins yet. He's only got 8. Alex Rins has 6. Miguel Oliveira has 5. Even getting to double digits is genuinely really hard. Only 25 men have ever done it. So for Maverick to even get that is an achievement in itself. He still had, in my opinion, a very good career. But the problem is, there's so much about what could have been. There's so many empty stories left on the table. And let's not forget, Maverick is still only 31 years old. Yep. He's got another 5 years if he was fully healthy and in form. This would be an early end of career if this is the end of his MotoGP tenure, which it's looking very much like it is, unfortunately. It's just sad. It's very sad.
My frustration with it above everything else as someone who respects the hell out of him as a rider is how self-inflicted a lot of it feels. The shoulder injury, that's motorcycle racing.
Yeah,
unfortunately, sometimes you are just dealt that hand and there is no recourse for it. But so much earlier in the career, has now come to roost of, hey, if this was him leaving KTM on bad terms with injury, well, he might go somewhere else. He's burnt every bridge there is to burn.
He's exhausted every outlet. Yamaha's never taking him back. They can't trust
never,
him.
Never,
ever. He burned the Aprilia bridge on the way out. He's fallen out with KTM on the way out. He's ridden for three different manufacturers in this top flight, and he's left on bad terms with all three of them. Like, that, no one's ever done that before. No one's been that inherently toxic within their own paddock and hurt their own stock as much as he has.
Dude, even Valentino Rossi's Ducati days, which were pretty universally shit, even he didn't leave Ducati with anything like the vitriol present here.
And I thought of Jorge Martin, his replacement, also, ironically, about to leave Ducati in a huff, but he's still got a world championship to show for that and still has way more upside in his career than Maverick does right now after this catastrophic injury, which is a shame. Injury luck is something I thought of when I get to this next topic, because now we know that Gresini is going to bring in 2020 world champion Yoann Mir and rookie candidate Danny Holgado for 2027. Like, we know the Mir's put the bike on the ground a lot. When has he ever been, like, seriously, seriously hurt?
It's weird, because usually the way he will crash almost always manifests as going in too hot and dumping the bike on the corner entry. And I guess sheer dumb luck, he's always been relatively unscathed from it. That said, the sheer quantity of crashes in 2023, when the Honda was ejecting its riders every five corners, all four of them, that did build up over the course of the year.
It's, I make no bones about admitting this. I happily read the races MotoGP content. Val Kurenevsky is a fantastic rider over there, and I have many thoughts about Simon Patterson that I will not discuss on this podcast any further. But there's something in the rider rankings he put out for Germany that was worth mentioning. Mir crashed in the Grand Prix. It whelmed all of us watching in the Discord. As Val points out in his rider rankings, that was Yoann Mir's 38th Grand Prix DNF in the four seasons he's been on a Honda. 38. 38.
I heard you the first time, Harrison.
He needs a reset.
38!
The team and Mir needs a change of scenery. He needed a change of scenery like yesterday, right?
Look, this is actually a weekend where it feels like Honda, like a lot of frustrations at Honda kind of boil back over, because we've heard it a little bit from all of them. I feel like this is the first weekend where Luca Marini's like, yeah, I don't know what the fuck's going on with this motorcycle, because they were just pretty poor all weekend, all of them. Other than Cal Crutchlow, who almost scored a point.
He was genuinely fighting ahead of Toprak Razgatioglu on the road. He was in 15th place, and then he crashed. God damn it, Cal. Oh.
So yeah, like, I feel like everyone at Honda were pretty nonplussed about the situation this weekend. But just imagine all those crashes, all that equipment torched, and then you get to rocket upwards, falling through the sky towards a Gresini Ducati on, I believe, what will be a factory bike, a current spec bike. Well, it will be, obviously, next year.
Factory support, yeah, he's getting he's on the factory supported Gresini. He's getting Frankie Karcecki as a crew chief next year.
If Frankie can't fix this dude, no one can.
Like, this is the most lucky bastard signing I think I can ever remember in MotoGP history, because this would not happen in any other circumstance.
Well, also, I mean, they did. Aprilia also did sign Francesco Bagnaia at the absolute lowest value that he's been at in recent years.
To be fair, they got
one of their guys was desperate to get out of the fucking team.
And Bagnaia was on a discount because he was on $10 million a year at Ducati, which was like the second most expensive contract on the grid. Also, I got to give a shout out to Gresini's social media team, who you may have seen the Orange is the New Black poster they did as a tribute and a thank you to Alex Marquez. And if you didn't notice, on the wall, there's a message scribbled on there from the wonderful Nadia Padovan, who says, quote, "Alex, it's truly hard to let you go. We've shared emotions, growth, and and moments that I will carry in my heart forever. I'm proud of the man and the rider that you are and have become. But before we say goodbye, there's still one more chapter to write together. Let's do it with the determination that has always set us apart.
God,
I'm not going to lie. I was genuinely emotional when reading that. It's from the heart. It's beautiful. It's incredibly touching. And this is why everybody roots for Grassini, because they are just such an emotion. You could tell they are a family. They're a band of brothers in that team. And, you know, it's hard not to be emotional when seeing that, because they love Alex Marquez in that team. They've loved every minute of having him as part of that camp. And they're losing a man that got them the closest they've ever been to a MotoGP World Championship. He was, like, Alex Marquez was runner-up last year, and he rode brilliantly in 2025. But as we've talked about before, Alex wants to get paid. He's 30 years old. He's in his prime right now. He wants money. And unfortunately, KTM factory bread is a lot
has
more.
Money. Now they do have money to pay him. Yippee. I can't wait to watch Alex Marquez be on just a mediocre-ass bike next year. As an aside, feels very Sete Gibernau that it was going so well all weekend until it very suddenly wasn't for that glorious paint scheme.
It was a beautiful, one of the best tribute liveries I have ever seen in MotoGP. It was beautiful. It was a throwback to the 2003 Telefonica movie star Honda back in the days. That was Sete Gibernau, Marco Melandri, that era. My favorite era as a biking fan and even as a Sete Gibernau supporter. besides that,
that corner has been much kinder to Grassini in the past, let's say.
Yes, it's fair to say that, you know, it wasn't lost on me that Alex Marquez binned it at the same quarter that Sete Gibernau won a German Grand Prix against Valentino Rossi many, many years ago, 23 years ago, as a matter of fact. It was the 2003 German Grand Prix that Sete Gibernau won, beating Valentino on the final corner because Valley got too defensive. Hit him with the old rope-a-dope, as you do. So, of course, Alex Marquez contributed to that by crashing. Thanks, Alex. Great, great, great work. The other man is going to be Grassini. His teammate, Danny Holgado, who is, I want to say, fifth in the Moto2 championship right now. Maybe not quite as sexy as a David Alonso or some of the other guys that are coming up next year, but this is a high-floor, very, very talented rider.
I like Holgado actually quite a bit. I think he is... He's the type of rider I think you can mold into anything you need him to be. I think that that's going to be a very good pickup for them.
It's been a bit of a messy Moto2 season this year because Manuel Gonzalez has dominated it. He's still got like a 55-point lead or whatever it is. And it's been like a clusterfuck at the top between him, Senna Regis, who we think is probably going to be on a tech free next year. It's going to be a matter of who the second rider is. Rumor is it's Luca Marini heading to tech free for next year alongside Senna Regis. Apparently, internal conflict. Gunther Steiner wants Marini. KTM wants Manu Gonzalez. I don't know. That's a tough call. I wouldn't want to be in that camp. But Holgado's won 3 Moto2 races in the last 2 years. He's really, really consistently good. Very nearly won the race this past weekend. Had to fight off the number one guy in the class right now, Ivan Ortola, who's apparently got half the paddock fighting for his signature for Moto2 next year. Keep an eye on him in 2027. But Holgado, really, really, really good rider. Before we get out of here, one bike rule might be dead.
Good. Right. Fuck him.
Yuri Pudjemont reported this for the Motorsport Network earlier this week. It looks like there is an impasse about this rule being declared. Allegedly, it's KTM that have dug their heels in and are like, we don't want this rule no matter what. It's exactly what we said in this pod a couple of weeks ago. Gunther Steiner apparently has led the charge to say this is a bad rule and we don't want it, basically.
Thank you, based Gunther Steiner?
Steiner was the most outspoken one against the rule. He was like, this is bullshit. It's not actually going to save us much in terms of pit crew. It's going to have riders on track less. In fact, Yuri wrote the story basically suggesting that it was the Italian manufacturers, and apparently it was originally Aprilia's idea to have this rule in place, with the cynical attitude of they arrogantly think that them and Ducati are above the other manufacturers of their 850s, and they're doing this to intentionally try and stunt their rivals' development.
I can certainly believe that. There's another element for Aprilia, is that Aprilia probably has the smallest budget of any of the manufacturers.
Yeah, they want to protect their investment, which I can understand to a degree. But apparently it was Aprilia that put this plan forward. Ducati are agreeing with them. Honda's been on the fence, basically saying we'll go with the majority. So they're pretty neutral in all of this. But apparently it's like, KTM has gone full Gandalf. You shall not pass, basically, because they have dug their heels in to say, no, we don't want this rule. So we're going
to... What are the rules in MotoGP? You got to get all the manufacturers to agree.
You need unanimous agreement for a rule like this to go through. So if even one factory says no, it can't go through. So... it looks like the rule is at an impasse. Apparently, there'll be one more meeting on this at the British Grand Prix after the summer break to try and see if there's any way they can thrash out a version of this rule to get it over the line. But it's looking like it will not be happening, certainly not for 2027, basically. So we'll have to wait and see what that looks like in the future. But that's about it for this MotoGP episode.
Yep.
Wrap that up on time.
Yeah, well, 5 minutes to spare. Go me. Planning. MotoGP is back. As mentioned, it's a 3.5 week summer break. We'll be back for the British Grand Prix at Silverstone. Do love me some Silverstone. On August the 9th. So yeah, a whole basically nearly 4 weeks without bike racing in the meantime. By the way, before we get out of here, if you have not seen race one of World Superbikes at Donington
Park, holy schmoly,
do it.
Go out of your way to watch it. Nicolò Buviger and Nicola Quona beat the piss out of each other. 10 out of 10 race, one of the best races you'll see all year. Incredible stuff. That was the streak-breaking race for the minor spoiler that Nicolò Buviger's 25-race winning streak in World Superbikes came to an end. But Buviger won the other two, so who cares? Anyway, watch that race. We'll be back with our Formula One review, of course, of the Belgian Grand Prix this weekend and IndyCar at Nashville. This, by the way, this goes out before this race happens. Brits, British IndyCar viewers, Nashville's race moves with the World Cup final. So if the World Cup final on Sunday goes to extra time and potentially penalties, the race starts immediately after the World Cup final finishes. Just bear in mind so you don't get hosed. Got it? Cool. We'll see you then. I've been Dre Harrison. They've been RJ O'Connell and Cam Buckley. Thank you very much for watching and listening, and we'll catch you guys again soon. Sayonara.
Later, y'all.
Yes, unfortunately, due to that final corner crash, it is still my bikes and not our bikes.